Okay, good morning. Welcome to the first technical breakout session for TechEd 2013, and we're going to be talking about Windows 8.1, what's new in it, and also devices. My name's Brendan Byrne. I'm a senior consultant with Microsoft Services here in Auckland. I'm going to be joined by a number of other people, Andrew McMurray, Nathan Mercer, Alan Birchall, and you know, what better way to start off this day by looking at, you know, the fast approaching release of 8.1. Well, when I wrote this, the RTM hadn't been released to anyone, but obviously now MSDN is all available. So hopefully you've got your hands on that already. And since we're a devices and services company, we're going to spend a bit of time towards the end of the session looking at all the new devices that have just been released and announced. And just to give you an update, just in case you don't know, Team New Zealand won another America's Cup race. So, yeah, and there's another one on now, very soon. I was going to have it kind of on a screen off to the side, but I thought I might get distracted quite a bit, so I've decided not to do that. You know, I've got a lot to pack into this hour. When I was given the presentation, I thought, oh, surely there's a presentation out there that I could reuse, but there wasn't. So I've had to pull a whole lot of information together from a whole lot of different sources to give you a real clear understanding of everything that is new in 8.1.
So taking that into consideration, I'll just ask if you've got any questions, if we can hold them to the end. We'll be available at the front at the end. That'll just help me get through all the content we've got to get through. Now, as a consultant, I often talk to customers around, you know, how people work, or how people would like to work based on, you know, all the technologies that are available. And one of the key things that comes up is the fact that the kind of the balance between work life and personal life, the line is kind of getting blurred. And I can guarantee that a lot of you here would be kind of classed as mobile workers. So you've got a laptop, you can work at home, you can work at work. Would that be true? Yeah, show of hands, mobile workers, yeah. And that's becoming more and more prevalent as time goes on. But I can also guarantee that in the context of technology, you use technology at home and you use technology at work. So you're a consumer as well as an IT pro. And really this is reflected in the way Windows 8 and 8.1 was designed. You know, it's all designed to bring together everything that you do, whether it's, you know, from a personal standpoint or whether it's a work standpoint, and kind of give you this consistent experience across all the Windows devices you've got. So whether it's at home, whether it's, you know, in the office, or whether you're on the go. But underpinning all that, from our point of view, obviously we've got to make sure that that underlying OS is always business ready. I'm sorry about this monitor up here. It's like a barrier to everyone over there, so I'll try kind of move backwards and forwards. So what are we going to cover? We're going to cover a few things. So we're going to cover devices towards the end of the session, and Nathan's going to look after that. We're also going to talk about apps. Now, apps, we're not really going to talk about the apps themselves, but the new ways that we're able to deliver the apps and these new experiences that we can deliver to end users. I will touch on some key security enhancements. There is a truckload of security enhancements, so I'll just concentrate on a couple. We'll also talk about how we're supporting BYOD and how we're empowering BYOD in your environment. And obviously in this mobile age, we're going to be talking a lot about mobility and connectivity. Okay, one of the first things though that you will notice, and it wasn't in that previous slide, is the fact that there's going to be a whole lot of UI enhancements. So what we're going to do in a second is jump over and do a quick demo. But I just want to just bring up a few key points. So we've really made a number of enhancements to improve the desktop and the start screen, and really the fluidity of moving between the two. We've made some significant enhancements in windowing, and you'll see that in the demo. And also being able to use multi-monitors. Now, I've got a Dell ultra-widescreen monitor, and I can quite easily fit four Windows 8-style apps comfortably on that ultra-wide monitor. It's a 21:9 ratio. If you're ever looking for a new monitor, look at ultra-wide. They're fantastic monitors. I bought one for my wife as well, so she could have one, but the thing is they daisy-chain, so now I've got two ultra-wide monitors. We've given control back to IT with the start screen. So I don't know whether you've tried to build a Windows 8 image. If you wanted to customize the start screen in your image, you had to build the image to a certain point, pause it, then kind of customize it manually, kick off the rest of the image creation process, capture the image, and then you could deploy it. Now, if you wanted to create a new start menu for a or change your start menu, you had to go through the whole image creation process again, which obviously isn't efficient from an IT standpoint. So we've given a lot of control back in that area. And there's been significant search enhancements, which we may cover in the demo. Now, some of these things we're going to cover in the demo, so I just want to draw your attention to really the bottom two. There's a number of new group policies, and Alan is in the room. He's got a session which talks about group policies and work folders, so I'd really encourage you to go along to that session. But, you know, we've got the ability now with PowerShell commandlets. So let's talk about the PowerShell commandlets first. So the PowerShell commandlets let you export and import start screen layouts. Okay, so you can export an XML format, and that lets you kind of create this mandatory start screen for users using group policy, or you can export as a bin file, and the bin file lets you basically inject it into the image and kind of use that as your default user start screen, which users can modify. Also, with the PowerShell, you can get a listing of all the application IDs. And that's important in the group policy because you can actually force certain applications to be viewed in group, through group policy to actually be displayed on the start screen. So, in saying that, let's just jump over to the demo on UI enhancements. So, this is the most technical part. So, that is background B. Okay, so I was going to create a demo account last night, but Telecom came in to put VDSL in my house, and when I left at lunchtime, they said it's all going to be great, and then at the end of the day, when I arrived home, they said it's not going to work, and they said it was going to take 4 or 5 hours to get my ADSL back, and this morning at 5:30, when it still wasn't there, I thought I'd better go into work early to create the demo account. So I'm using a personal account, so hopefully no one sends me any bad emails right at this point in time. So one of the first things you'll notice is the lock screen. So the lock screen is changed from just a single screen. Now this is really something to help personalize your device. So now you've got this collage kind of slideshow ability, and that's just going to grab files from locations that you specify, whether it's on SkyDrive or whether it's on the local PC. Now one thing that you can do, and this is my wife's laptop, so hopefully it works, is if you've got things like you want to take a camera and you've got a tablet, you can actually just scroll down. And that brings up the camera. And, oh, it's taking a picture of me. It was supposed to be the other camera. But that would actually not be very good. So if you've got a tablet and you just want to take a photo or something like that, you can just scroll down. You don't have to go through the whole process of trying to unlock to be able to take those pictures. Now, if I take a shot, okay, I can actually go back and see the shots that that I've taken. But I can't go back and edit other shots that other people might have taken. Now this also works for things like Skype, so if a call comes through, you can answer the Skype call without having to go through and unlock the screen. Now I'll just hit unlock. One of the main things you'll notice is the new tile sizes. So we've got the small tile sizes that have been added and the large tile sizes. Obviously the large tile size you can see there with the weather, that allows just more information to be put onto that tile. And for the very small ones, obviously if a certain application isn't live, then you might not choose for it to be a full tile. So you'll also notice one thing, that I actually have a lot of applications installed on here, but you'll notice that my start screen is quite small. By default in Windows 8.1, new applications don't automatically get deployed to your start screen. So you kind of get away from the scenario where, you know, you get your new machine, then IT starts sending lots of applications down to your device, and then all of a sudden you have just screeds of new applications on the very right-hand side of your screen, of your start screen. So this is really putting the power back into the user's hands to display exactly what they want. And like I said before, you've got the group policy options. So if there is a line of business application or a company portal, you can force those to be displayed on the start screen. Also, editing the start screen. Who found it quite difficult to kind of modify the start screen in Windows 8? Okay, so that's improved a whole lot. So, for instance, if I just want to modify a few, if I press and hold this one, okay, so you can see one is highlighted now, and that was just by pressing and holding. I can actually go through and select multiple. Now I can actually move those across as a group and create a new group. If I press and hold them again, I can resize them all like that. I just want to put them back. I'm pedantic. I, you know, want to make sure they're all in the right place. But I'm not going to worry about that because I'll run out of time. And also, if you want to name a group, you can just tap on the top where it says name group, enter in the name. So I might put work apps. Okay, just tap a clear space and it all goes back to normal. So another thing is multitasking. So in Windows 8, you went into an app. Okay, for instance, I'm going to go into mail. No one's sent me any mails, especially Craig Sench at the back. I thought he might send me something. So I've got an application here. If I clicked on a link in Windows 8, it would bring up Internet Explorer full screen. Okay, so you kind of got this jarring between the app you're in and then the next app that you're wanting to open. Now, if I click on this Trade Me one, it opens up side by side. Okay, so you don't get that jarring feeling of, oh, I'm in Mail, oh, I'm in Internet Explorer. There's this nice fade between the two. Now, another thing to notice is if I go back to the start screen and I decide to add another application, like I'm going to click my alarm one there, it hovers in the middle. Okay, and at this stage, I can actually choose, okay, do I want to put it on the side or do I want to put it in the middle? I'm going to put it in the middle. Okay, so that's multi-monitor there. Now, one thing that you just want to notice is, if I just put my cursor down here, you'll see these little white lines here. So as I kind of click between the different windows there, you'll see that white line moves. And what that's indicating is which application's kind of in focus for the charms, okay? Because if you're in Trade Me or in Internet Explorer and you want to print for that, you've got to make sure the charms are associated with the application that you're using. So that's another thing that's happening there. Okay, the desktop. Actually, there was one more thing. All apps. If I swipe up, I get all my apps. Okay, so you can see there's a lot of apps there. And you get to choose how you want to manage those apps. So whether it's by name, and that is interesting. My wife's laptop. Preview. That should come up with categories and the like. But it's not going to do that. So you can actually... That's the first time it's ever done that. Goodness. Should we switch to America's Cup and see how we're doing? No, okay, right. Usually that will go to switch to either category or most used applications. And you can actually choose for those to be displayed by default, for instance, through the group policy settings or through your navigation settings, which we're going to look at in a second. So if we go to the desktop, main thing you'll notice is that we do have a start button back. So those little start buttons... I actually like it because I couldn't stand trying to find those four little pixels right down in the bottom corner to actually bring up the Start Me. Now it's obviously a nice landing point to get there. Also, I'm not sure whether everyone knows, but you can right-click down there and you kind of get an administrative kind of menu there, so you can easily get to things like Device Manager and the likes. That was there in 8, but not many people know about it. Okay. So if we just go into the properties and we go to navigation, this is where I can choose things like go to desktop instead of going to the start menu. So if you're in a corporate environment and most of the users are using desktop-based applications, you know, legacy-type applications, then this option means you can have them booting to desktop rather than into the start menu when they log in. You can also set show my desktop background as the start screen background. So if I'm just going to go OK on that. And if I go into here, you can see now there's kind of fluidity between the start screen and the desktop. It just feels like the start screen's just overlaying rather than actually that big jump from start screen to desktop. And I'm just going to try once more to get the all apps. Come on, do it. Do it for me. Ah, okay, right. Give up. Okay, so I'm just going to cut back to the slides now. So deployments, I can see Michael's in the room. So I'm just going to briefly touch on deployments. So Michael Niehaus has a session, I think it's at 10:40, next session. So if you're involved in deployment of operating systems or need to know about that, I highly recommend that. And there's also one, I can't remember what day it is, but on 2013 and Windows 8 Tips and Tricks. Now, I'm not going to go in any detail around this. I'll leave that for Michael's session, but I will just cover a couple of points. So obviously there, you've got your traditional refresh scenario where we kind of capture user states, we deploy an image, and then we restore user states. And we use, you know, tools like Config Manager or MDT with user state migration to achieve that. So you've still got that option, but there is a new update process, which really uses Windows setup to update from Windows 8 to 8.1. And it's really all around making that process of migrating from, or updating from 8 to 8.1 as painless as possible. Because what you don't want is, you know, in the IT space is have to worry about, okay, right, we're going to 8.1, now we've got to rebuild all our machines. So it's trying to make that process as easy as and painless as possible in future. And 8.1 will come out, has come out, and then, you know, there might be another dot release. So obviously you want it to be as simple as possible going to the next versions. As far as tools, you need ADK for 8.1, which has WinPE 5.0 and USMT 6.3, and that includes support for Office 2013 migration, so you don't have to worry about hotfixes. And you do need MDT 2013 or Config Manager 2012 R2. Both of those products support deployment of UEFI devices. So there is a new disk layout that you have to be aware of, but both products support it. And you can actually get to a point where in your task sequence or the process of building the machine can actually interrogate the BIOS to determine whether you've got a legacy BIOS or a UEFI BIOS and then apply the appropriate disk layout. So definitely go along to Michael's session to find out more about that. So let's take a quick look at applications. One of the first things we get asked is hardware requirements, and while hardware, compatibility, not hardware requirements, we get asked about compatibility, and hardware requirements not related to applications, but I just thought I'd bring it up here. In general, it's unchanged, okay, so if you're on 8 and even possibly 7, you're not going to have to basically update your fleet to support 8.1. With desktop applications, compatibility is excellent. So if you've got a Windows 7 app that is working, a Windows 8 app, they should work with no changes on 8.1. Obviously, we can't control how people develop their applications. There might be exceptions to the rules, but in general, it should be pretty much far and few between. As far as Windows Store apps, they were designed for Windows 8, they will work on Windows 8.1. Now, some of those applications might need to be tweaked to support new functionality, like the screen sizing, because in the past you just had the dominant screen and you had the kind of the sidebar kind of mode. Obviously now you're able to scale that quite a bit. So there'll need to be tweaks for those applications that you'll probably see come through Windows Store. And as far as IE is concerned, we've got compatibility modes that kind of support way back to IE 7. The main thing I want to touch on is assigned access. And this is where we're kind of giving new businesses new ways to give that application experience to end users, whether it's their end users or even whether it's customers. Now, assigned access wasn't actually in the preview, so and also kind of coined kiosk mode. So it wasn't in the preview, but it is in the RTM. And it's just a way that we can enable a single Windows Store application experience on a device. Okay, so if you think maybe a child learning app in a school, or maybe a like a customer service app in a department store, you've just got a single access to a single application. There's a whole lot of predefined filters which are enabled, which means people can't do standard actions like open up other applications or access system files and the like. If you combine that with the new start screens policies and the fact that we can kind of give people a mandatory start screen, it opens up all these kind of new kiosk type models. So you've got like a single purpose model. So you've got a single purpose model with assigned access where they can only access one application, or kind of a multi-purpose model where they can access multiple applications. But obviously the security side isn't as restricted as the single access model with assigned access. On top of that, if you go a step further, we've released Windows 8.1 embedded for industry. Now that is for all those type of, you know, POS devices, ATMs, anything to do with displays and the like. And there's a significant amount of further management tools and locking down that you can do with industry, and that's available for all volume license customers. Okay, mobility and connectivity. Well, just obviously this is growing. You know, I did a workforce analysis with a customer, trying to find out how they worked and how they wanted to work. When we got to how they wanted to work, basically everyone, they said, okay, we don't want to worry about office workers or task workers. Everyone's going to be a mobile worker. So all 250 people are going to be mobile workers. And it's heading more and more that way. So obviously we need to keep up and make sure we're kind of supporting all these different scenarios. So with 8.1, we're continuing to improve just the amount of inbuilt Wi-Fi functionality that's kind of built into the devices. Also, we're looking at really making NFC a first-class citizen. So there's some features that we've enabled which really highlight these. So obviously, wireless display. We've got the ability to... we've got this native Miracast display support. Okay, so you can project to a Miracast, actually I'm just gonna have a drink of water, feel my mouth drying up. If anyone is kind of looking at whether we're winning in the America's Cup, if you can let us know if we win, okay? Postponer, okay, right, okay. Okay, so we can natively kind of connect to a Miracast projector, access it via a PIN or NFC, and then once we're connected, it's just as if we were connected via cable. And with the amount of cables we've got up here, it would be fantastic to replace all these cables. Also, we've got Wi-Fi direct printing, so we can print directly to a printer. And what generally happens is it's like an ad hoc wireless printer connection. Okay, so what happens is the device will turn into an access point, and we'll connect to the access point, and allows us to kind of connect without having to go get a whole lot of drivers and like to be able to connect to those printers. And if you kind of match that up with something like NFC in the enterprise, that means we can go around and basically tap to connect. Okay, I don't know how many printers you've got in your environment. In Microsoft, on the level that I'm on, we've got two printers, but try to find out what the printer queue is. I've got to go ask someone, and then they kind of, I've got both of them, then they don't know which one to use. Imagine being able to walk up with your tablet or your laptop, maybe not your full-size desktop, but you know, you walk up with your laptop or your tablet and just tapping the printer. Now, you don't have to have an NFC-type printer. You can actually buy tags, which you could put on the printer and program them to actually point to the printer queue. So you just tap and then connect. And so whether it was a connection through standard printer connectivity on the domain, or whether it's through Wi-Fi Direct. Also, we're working with OEMs to try and make sure that, you know, there's kind of increased devices with system on a chip mobile broadband. Okay, at the moment, mobile broadband, you kind of add, you know, you've got to add a part, and that's means you've either got something sticking out the side of your laptop, or you know, it increases the cost of the device or whatever the case may be, but trying to build, you know, have as many machines that have got that built-in system on a chip, mobile broadband, will just bring down those prices and just make it easier to have a mobile device. You know, for instance, the Surface RT, it didn't have that. I would love it to have that, but we'll, you know, obviously, I don't know what's happening with the next release. I'm not going to say anything. And then if you've got that mobile broadband PC, then you can enable it as a personal Wi-Fi. So if you've got a number of devices, okay, you could enable your PC as a personal hotspot and then connect your phone to it or your tablet or whatever the case may be, or other people that you're working with could all just port through your device. Okay, data. Now we're gonna, obviously SkyDrive. Okay, SkyDrive is fully integrated now. Okay, it is no longer an application that you install. Okay, so taking that into consideration, they've actually changed my computer to this PC, and that really helps users differentiate between, you know, files that are installed to the local device or files that are installed to the cloud. When you go in there, by default, all files are available online only. Okay, and if you disconnect, you can actually still see your files. Okay, you'll notice that they're slightly transparent, but when you double-click on one, it will just alert you saying, you know, you don't have access to this at the moment. Do you want to make it available offline next time you access that file? So it's no longer you kind of log on and then you can't see your files. They're always there, and it will let you know that you are offline and you'll be able to access it next time you do connect. And you can basically make whole files offline, whole files, whole folders, your whole SkyDrive, or individual files available offline. So if you've got quite a large SkyDrive, I've got like 45 gig, maybe I don't want to have all of that syncing. Maybe there's specific directories that I want synced. Another thing that has been introduced with 8.1 and 2008-2012 R2 is work folders. Again, Alan Birchall is running a session on group policy and work folders. So I encourage you to go to that session. Really, what that's doing is driving the BYOD type scenario in the enterprise. It's allowing you to use personal devices and access corporate files. Okay. Now, really, all it is doing is synchronizing files, simplistically, synchronizing files from your device back to that Windows Server 2012 R2 file server. Okay, and then it will sync it with your other devices. Now, it isn't a shared folder anyway. There is a direct relationship between the user and the work folder, so you can't have multiple people. So it is really for your individual files. So if you're working on a file on your main device and then you're going to go away somewhere and you're going to use your personal device, then you could put certain work files into that work folder and then they would be synced onto your personal device. There was one point I just want to make sure that I do cover. Also, it's very important that from a security point of view that we made sure that these features supported things like dynamic access control and rights management to make sure we've got a certain amount of, you know, governance and policy that we can apply to the data while it is sitting on a personal device. It's not about just data though, also your apps and your settings, as well as your data, are made to be always with you. So in this scenario you can see that, you know, you've got your start screen, you've got your layout and all the apps that you've got installed, and you've got a bunch of Windows settings. Okay, you've also got your personal data, okay, and that's all synced up to SkyDrive, if you choose to use that in the enterprise. Okay, then you've got your work applications, okay, and with those you might save, you know, things to work folders, or you might save to, you know, SkyDrive Pro, so individual versus team-based files, so that's all synced up. So in a scenario where you get your device lost or damaged, or maybe you've just got multiple devices, you get given the new device or the replacement device, you connect up with your Microsoft account, and all the apps are installed on the device, okay, if you choose to do that. And if you've loaded up RTM, it will actually ask you exactly what things you want synchronized onto the device. So apps will be installed, your start screen layout will be installed, your data, your SkyDrive will be there, it'll be just available online only. Then you connect up to work folders in SkyDrive Pro, and everything is synchronized down. So you can go between devices. I go between my wife's laptop, my two Surfaces that we've got in the house, and I get a consistent experience across all of them. I don't really know which, I don't know which is my Surface anymore, because they're both configured exactly the same. We can both use them. Actually, mine is the one with the asset tag on the back. But then my work one, I've got it changed so the start menu and the applications don't install, because I don't really want all my personal applications coming on my work device. So you can see there how we're kind of just making sure that everything is always with you, and you get that consistent experience across devices. Okay. As far as VPN is concerned, how are we going for time? Okay. As far as VPN is concerned, direct access, you know, has provided immense kind of value to IT and end users. Okay, but it does really require that the machines are domain joined and that you're running Windows 7 or above. And inevitably what happens is some customers are going to have devices which don't support those requirements. So what are their options? The only really option is to use some kind of VPN client, so whether it's the Microsoft VPN client or some third-party client which has been installed on the device. With Windows 8.1, we've really extended the ability for third-party vendors to add their VPN clients into the OS, both on x86 and on the ARM platform. And this is really good for customers that have been kind of evaluating maybe Windows RT as companion devices or the like in their business. Now they've got the option of something more than just the Microsoft VPN clients. They can start to align their VPN strategy for the rest of their laptops. I do have a list of supported VPN clients, but I'm just not sure whether it's been announced yet. So I don't know if Nathan knows, but if we do find out, you can come and talk to us afterwards. From a manageability and provisioning point of view, we can manage it all now with PowerShell, and we can manage it with Intune. So if you need to install and configure these VPN clients, you can do it in an automated way, and that's really good if you've got a large number of devices and you don't want to have to do it on an individual basis. On top of that, as far as experience is concerned, we've improved that as well. So you've got the traditional user experience, or user-initiated experience, but we've also got this process of auto-triggered. Okay, so what auto-triggered means and how it works is if you've got a link and it connects to an intranet site, okay, and you click on that link, you'll actually be prompted for your VPN credentials. Compared to what happens now is you click it and it says, you know, it brings up Internet Explorer and says, you know, can't find the website. So now it will actually prompt you for your VPN credentials. You enter your VPN credentials and it will take you into the website. If you've already entered those credentials, say on Windows Logon, that means, you know, you get that email and you click, it will just automatically take you in there, okay? Also, a thing to take into consideration is the fact that it is kind of battery life aware. So if for any reason you're disconnected, okay, it will connect back up if you use an application that requires it, or you hit a namespace that requires it. Also, Config Manager. Config Manager has integration now and Intune, so you can create those VPN profiles and send them to the device. And also the applications. You can configure which applications actually support auto-trigger. So you can say this application in the deployment is going to be auto-triggered or support auto-triggering. Okay, Windows to Go. Okay, so what's new in Windows to Go? Main thing about Windows to Go in 8.1 is the fact that the Windows Store is available. Okay, so in the past you could only really run desktop apps or you had to sideload applications into a Windows to Go device. Now you can access the Windows Store and get those Windows Store apps on the device. The ecosystem is growing rapidly, okay, and there's truckloads of devices. You know, they range from 32 gig right up to 500 gig, and there's a whole lot of different security that vendors are adding to these devices. And I'd just like to ask Andrew McMurray just to come up and give us a short demo on Windows to Go.
Thanks, mate. Okie doke. So what I've got here is my Surface Pro and the iMation IronKey W500. Now, this is an absolutely awesome device. It comes in a couple of different models. There's a W300, which is ruggedized, and the W500 here, which is ruggedized and also has encryption built into the stick. So you can utilize the encryption on the stick to protect the operating system simply via a pre-boot authentication password, and then you can further BitLocker the OS installation on top of that if you really want to. There's a new one coming out fairly soon called the W700, which is also going through FIPS certification, so it's really quite good in that respect. But you can basically treat these things like absolute dirt, and they will continue to run just fine. You can smash this thing around here as much as you want. You can chuck it over there. You can basically jump on it. You can pretty much do whatever you want to, and this thing will not die. We can also throw it in a glass of water, I'm told. I was going to do it this morning, but no one could provide me with a towel or something to clean it off with before I plugged it into the Surface Pro, so I wasn't prepared to do it. But just to give you an idea of what it's like, I've got my Surface Pro here. I'll just slot this into the USB port and fire it up, and hopefully we can see that firing up, just to give you an idea of what the pre-boot auth sequence looks like. Basically, with this stick, the pre-boot authentication sequence asks you for an authentication and then unlocks the OS partition and allows us in. One of the cool things about this is that you can specify the number of times a user can get the password wrong, and then the device will either wipe itself or will destroy the crypto keys in the device, making the entire thing useless for anything other than a paperweight, which is kind of cool. Now, we're just waiting for it to go into pre-boot auth here. You can also set things like information on the pre-boot screen, who it belongs to, stuff like the user's name, you know, their phone number perhaps, and just a little message. So if we can sort of zoom in on there and just give us an idea of what that looks like, that could be fairly useful. So you can see there it's got my information on the left-hand side there. What I'll do is I'll just put in the key. This now unlocks the operating system partition, and then simply hit reboot now. It's now going to boot into Windows running off that USB stick. As per Windows to Go in all of its forms, we have the ability to take that stick, insert it into any machine that's capable of running Windows 7 or Windows 8 into a USB 3 port. Although my testing, although not directly supported, my testing on USB 2 ports with this device works fantastically as well. And we should see in a moment that we already have, that we've booted into Windows. So if you're looking at Windows to Go solutions, definitely recommend the iMation stuff if you are needing that extra amount of security. They also have some management software coming out too that will allow you from a central position to monitor the status of all of the keys, to lock users out of keys, to remotely destroy keys, etc., etc. And iMation have said that they will also be working to integrate that into Configuration Manager as well at some point, so that's really interesting. So hopefully that just gives you a bit of an idea of Windows to Go and what the possibilities are with some of the more advanced sticks that are coming out, and I'll hand it back to Brendan.
Thank you. Worked, okay. So it's a kind of a good segue into enterprise-grade security. So obviously, you know, the landscape of security is, from a security standpoint, is always changing. But the pillars that we kind of work on within Microsoft don't really change. But what we do with inside them does. Now, as you can tell, I'll just jump to the next part, there's a significant amount of improvements, enhancements that have been made in 8.1. I would need a whole session to go through them. So I'm just going to touch on a couple. So the main one is biometrics, okay? So biometrics, there's been significant changes in there, both the readers and the experience. So modern readers, obviously, they need to have liveness detection, because you've all seen all those movies where they chop people's fingers off and use them to kind of gain access. And sure enough, with the readers that you've got at present, that would work. So obviously they need liveness detection to be able to tell the difference between something that's live, dead, or a fake fingerprint that's kind of being pulled from something. Also, what was it? And they're not swipe-based. So Obviously, swipe-based will still be supported, but in our view, touch is a better way to go. So you actually put your entire thumb or finger on the device to get the reading, rather than swiping. Because the whole swiping thing, you've got to be, you know, you've got to do it right in the right speed, and if you go off to the side, it doesn't work. So the touch process, you don't have to worry about being as dexterity as much as possible. To make biometrics work well in 8.1, we really needed to bake the infrastructure into the operating system so it would work end-to-end with nothing more than just 8.1 and a supported reader. Also, you needed to make sure that right through the OS, you know, there were sign-in options for biometrics. So you didn't have to fall back to passwords in certain places. Okay, and to achieve a lot of these things, the first thing we had to do is we had to have an enrollment process built into the environment, because at the moment each vendor's got their own enrollment process. So we had to build one into the OS to really make that a simpler process for end users. We went a step further. So think about purchasing. So we actually added something called Touch to Buy. So if you go into the store and you're prompted to, you know, pay with your credit card, you can touch to buy rather than entering in details. Go into Xbox Music, Xbox Live. You can get that same type of functionality. The other one I'm going to briefly touch on is multi-factor authentication. So smart cards just adds that whole extra layer of security to your environment. But generally, from a complexity point of view and a challenge for actually implementing it, most people don't have smart cards. So how many people here have smart cards in their business? Not many. But obviously it's, and there's Microsoft people putting up their hands. So obviously, you know, it's a great thing to have from a security point of view, but it's just too complex to manage. Okay, and implement. And you've got to worry about, you know, readers and cards and what happens when people lose them. Okay, so in version 8, we came out with the virtual smart card, or being able to virtualize that smart card and put it on the TPM. Okay, the problem with that, while it worked well for domain join machines, for non-domain join machines, it was really difficult. Okay, so in 8.1, what we've done is we've added a whole lot of APIs. Okay, and with those APIs, we've really made that process in a BYOD type scenario as simple as possible. So that's one of the main things in 8.1. Also, I'll briefly touch on full device encryption. Okay, so it is mainstream now. It's available in all editions of Windows. Obviously, it's critical for businesses for disk encryption. But there is an increasing demand in consumer devices. And since we've got BYOD and you've got these personal devices and business scenarios, it's even more crucial that these devices are encrypted. And what is really happening, you'll see that TPM will really become standard equipment. Okay, it's not there at the moment, but you'll find out, you know, in future that not having a TPM is more of an exception to the rule, so it will allow for this full disk encryption. One of the things it does need is connected standby. It needs to be supporting connected standby. So what I'm actually going to do, quickly jump into BYOD, just because we want to get into those devices. With Windows 8, we really had two options. You've either got this full enterprise management, you know, you've got full control of the device, or you've got, you know, this light management with, you know, more just governance around things like, you know, accessing email from your phone. Now we've got this kind of this middle tier, okay, and that's through the mobile device management products that we support in 8.1. So mobile device management. Okay, so we support the Open Mobile Alliance device management protocols, okay, and there's a number of vendors that support this at present. So you've got Intune, you've got Mobile Iron, you've got EarWatch. Any third-party vendor that comes along that supports these, Windows will support it without any agents required unless they're doing anything kind of different on top of the standard stuff. Workplace join. Now, workplace join will be covered in, Alan, you covered workplace join to a degree in work folders? Yep, so they'll talk about it in Alan's session as well. It's really that middle ground between all access or no access. Okay, it's giving, you know, with a Windows 8 PC, you're either domain joined or you're not. If you're domain joined, you can access all corporate resources, IT can manage your device, and if you're not domain joined, then it's hard to manage those devices. It's hard to get access to those corporate resources. And so it's really giving, workplace join is giving that middle ground, allowing you to have light control over the device. And that's obviously really important when you're taking consideration things like work folders. So that's a new thing in Windows 8.1. As far as the last thing I'll just talk about is Windows 8.1 on ARM. We've talked about things like MDM support and inbox VPN clients and workplace join, work folders. Another significant addition to 8.1 on ARM is the fact that Outlook 2013 RT will be included. Okay, so that was probably one of the most requested features for RT devices. With that addition, it's kind of making the business case for supporting these type of devices quite compelling for businesses. I use one personally, and I can quite easily do a majority of my work on an RT device. So with that, we'll actually hand over to Nathan and talk about devices. Okay, so.
Okay, so for the very last part of the session, we're going to go through and kind of show you a bunch of the new kind of Windows 8.1 and Windows 8 hardware. You guys keep on hearing us talking about being a devices and services company. And this is something that we are, really deadly serious about. We've just spent, $10 billion New Zealand dollars buying Nokia and, getting about 32,000 new Microsoft employees coming into, the Microsoft business. And one of the things that we've also done is we've actually just created a new role here in New Zealand for someone specialising in the hardware and Windows, from a device point of view. And that's my new role. But anyway, the thing we're going to show you today is really one of the benefits of Windows, which is choice. Across all of the different screens that you have, different screen sizes, through to tablets, through to convertibles, through to hybrids, through to these new style devices that we call two-in-ones. So I've got some colleagues behind me here which are going to bring these devices out as we talk to them. I don't know if we're going to switch to the camera so that people can see this, but this device that you're going to see on the screen pretty soon is one of the first Windows 8 8-inch tablets coming out, the Acer Iconia W3. And this is, this 8-inch segment is a really interesting, area. You think about the growth in tablets, most of the projected growth in tablets is actually in these smaller 7-inch, 8-inch form factors. And this is a really nice, light device, great for holding it, in portrait, great for reading books, things like that. So really interesting device, full x86. So you can domain join it, and in fact, all of the 8-inch Windows 8.1 tablets that are coming out are actually going to have Office built into them as well. So let's talk about some of the other kind of larger tablets that are available. And just to be clear, all of these devices that we're going to show you today, we've got on the Microsoft stand. So if you come and see me at the Microsoft stand, you can play with these, you can look at these devices, you can see all the different connectors and things that they've got. So this is a device called the Iconia W700 or the P3, ultrabook style device, but it also is a tablet. You can actually take that out. It's got a Bluetooth keyboard available in it. So great example of a device when you've got this device dilemma of you wanting a tablet but needing a PC. And this is a great example of a device like that. So the next device we're going to look at, this has actually been one of the most popular Windows 8 tablets sold in New Zealand to date. This is called This is called the HP ElitePad. And the great thing about this device is HP have built an entire hardware ecosystem around this tablet. They've got a ruggedized, they've got a ruggedized case for it. They have got a docking station so you can plug it into your desk. And they've also got some interesting things like retail accessories. Like if you want to take credit card swipe imprints and things like that, this is a great example of a true business tablet. So this next one we're going to look at is called the Lenovo ThinkPad Helix. This is the fastest Windows 8 tablet that you can get. You can spec this guy up here with a Core i7, with a 256 gig SSD, and with 8 gigs of RAM. And this again is a great example of a two-in-one tablet, where I've got my tablet and I can also use it like a laptop. The screen can also go around the other side, and inside that keyboard you've got a full another battery, so you can really get 7-8 hours battery life off a proper kind of Core Intel device. Next one we're going to look at is this is one of my favorite devices, and this has also been really, really popular in New Zealand as well. This is the Lenovo ThinkPad Tablet 2. This is lighter than an iPad. It's got a beautiful, nice Lenovo build quality and finish. It's got an active digitizer in the screen, so you can actually take proper OneNote notes. It also has a 3G port, so if you want to have that wireless WAN, 3G broadband connectivity, you've got it all on this device. It can come with a keyboard, it can come with a dock. It's a really, really great, really, really great example of a device. And what about if you are a field worker, if you're someone that's going to throw a tablet into the back of your truck and things like that? Here's a great device from Panasonic called the ToughPad. That's ruggedized. You can drop this. Great example of a ruggedized device for kind of specialized vertical workloads like that. So next one we're going to look at is some of the ultrabooks, and ultrabooks get really interesting this year in 2013, in that all of the ultrabooks have the capability for doing the Miracast technology that Brendan was talking about before. And this is an example of, this is actually the fastest and lightest 14-inch Ultrabook device that you can buy. This one here actually has a touch screen. And one of the things that I suggest that you guys do when you're going out and procuring your hardware, think about just paying that little bit extra to get the device with touch, because then you are really future-proofing your Windows investment so that you can use touch when it makes sense to you. And again, that's really one of the beauties of Windows, is you can switch easily between a mouse, a keyboard, a touch, and a stylus for devices that have got the active digitizers. So let's just talk about some other kind of interesting devices as well. And this is a new device that's coming out from Fujitsu. We don't actually have this device here. This is actually not released yet, but this is a great device that's actually waterproof. You can dunk this in underwater. This is going to be one of the first tablets that's shipping with the new Intel Bay Trail Atom chips that I'll talk a little bit more about in a couple of minutes. So one of the other kind of interesting devices, and again you can play with this on the Microsoft stand, is the Acer Inspire R7. It's a big device. It's got a big screen. It's got a big beautiful screen. It's a notebook. It's touch, and you can also fold the hinge back and use it like a tablet. So that's a really interesting nice device if you want a big kind of widescreen tablet. Some of the other interesting devices, and we don't actually have these have only kind of just been announced, but one of the really great ones, if we can switch to the slides, is this new Samsung Series 9 notebook. Some of you guys might have seen the advertisements for these. If you drive out to Auckland Airport, there's a big banner on the motorway advertising these. If you look at the screen resolution of this device, this is a really thin device, really lightweight. It's got an amazing screen res. What we call high DPI, which is one of the new Windows 8.1 supports. It's a great example of a high DPI device. This Toshiba Kira book is one that we do have here. This is another example of a device with a high-res screen. This is the first Windows 8 device shipping with high-res, called the Toshiba Kira book, and it's got an absolutely beautiful, stunning high-res screen. I really recommend you go and have a look at that. Go and have a look at that device. So, I'm also just going to quickly talk about Windows Phone, because that's also, really interesting and important as well. We're going to make some announcements right now about what are the kind of new models that are coming out later this year in New Zealand. We've actually sold a lot of these different Nokia Lumias here in New Zealand. The 920 has been really, really popular. We've got the Lumia 925 coming out in the 1st of October. This device here is going to be exclusive to Vodafone. This is much, much lighter than the Lumia 920 if you've ever played with those, and it's got an even better camera than what's in the Lumia 920. It's actually not on the screen.
Oh.
The other new device that we've got coming out, this is the Lumia 1020. And again, you can play with this on the Microsoft stand, or you can play with this on the Nokia stand as well. This device here is going to be available in the last week of September, so not very long now. This device is going to be exclusive to Telecom. The other new device that's coming out, as in fact is already out, is the Lumia 625. This to date is the largest screen size that Nokia has. It's a 4.8-inch device. This retails for $499. It's available now on Telecom and soon on Vodafone. And this device is the cheapest 4G phone that you can buy, bar none. So $499 for a 4G phone. So if you can switch back to the slides.
Yep.
So we're at a really interesting time in the industry where we're about to release Windows 8.1, and also you guys know that's coming out in October 18 here in New Zealand. There's also a lot of interesting stuff happening in the silicon. And one of the great things, Intel have really been powering away at improving the battery life of their full core i-style CPUs. And so if you're looking for one of those, make sure you buy the new Haswell-style devices. This, without doing anything else, will give you about 40% better battery life than what you get on a current Core i5 chip. The other interesting thing about Haswell is it also supports the connected standby scenario that Brendan mentioned before, which today is only available on the Atoms. And in Windows 8.1, this new feature is actually called Instant Go. The other really interesting thing that's happening is what's happening in the Atom, the lower power, longer battery life style devices. But just to be clear, these are still full x86. Intel have announced their new Bay Trail chips at the Intel Developer Forum, which is on in San Francisco right now. And one of the great things about these is they're going to be quad core. So today your Atoms are dual core. The new Atom is quad core, twice as fast, same long battery life, and are 64-bit rather than the current Atoms, which are only 32-bit. And then what we're also seeing is a lot of innovation in the ARM-style devices as well, the ones that run Windows RT and Windows Phone. And what we're going to see there is a range of new devices that are yet to be announced that are using these new Snapdragon 800 processors and the new Tegra 4 chips as well, which again are much, much faster than the current RT tablets that are shipping. And they also have the silicon on a chip mobile broadband stuff built in as well. So lots of stuff happening there. Come and have a play with some of these devices on the stand. Come and talk to me. I'm specialising in these devices now. So if you want to know, what's the right device for you, if you want to order 1,000 Surfaces, come and talk to me, and I can talk to you about that. So let's wrap up with Brendan. And
okay. Oh God. So as you can see, there is a significant amount of improvements in 8.1, and it's only been just over a year since it was released. Obviously, hopefully you can see that, you know, from a design perspective, it's really bringing together both, you know, things that you might do personally, things that you might do in work, okay, giving you that consistent experience across all the devices you might use, and generally people use a lot more devices these days. But underpinning all, it's really business ready. So hopefully that gives you a good understanding of everything that we've, all those new features and enhancements. And
so I've got a, just before Brendan wraps up and talks about some of the other sessions that are related, I've got a question for you. And if you're a hardware geek, you'll know the answer to this. I talked about the Intel Bay Trail that's got four cores in it. What's the Intel name for those cores? And I will give you one of these phones. No, that was the core. Bay Trail is the name of the chip. What are the names of the cores inside the chip? What did you say? Nope. Nope. Okay, any other answers before I switch to an easier question? No. What's the new name for Connected Standby in Windows 8.1? No? Who said Instant Go first? Come and get this.
Okay, so thank you very much. There's a bunch of other sessions to go to. I've highlighted them all throughout the presentation. But just if you've got any questions, feel free to come down and talk to us at the end. Thank you very much.